Welcome to Intrepid Heroes, an actual play podcast of the Starfinder 2nd Edition playtest adventure, A Cosmic Birthday. I'm Jason, and I'll be your GM.
I'm Scott, and I'm playing Zosra Shizori, a Patra Skirmisher operative who's looking for a new cause.
I'm Stephanie, and I'm playing Starchild, a Soki envoy full of energy from the Drift.
I'm Tim, and I'm playing Krizek Vare, a Warblood Vest soldier with a knack for violence.
I'm Mark. I'm playing Iswar, a Kasathan Graviton Solarian.
I'm John, and I'm playing Dr. Vic Dume, an android witchwarper seeking a lost reality.
I'm Ron, and I'm playing Jode, a human mystic looking to make the galaxy a better place.
And now, on to the episode. Hello, and welcome to the first episode of Intrepid Heroes playthrough of A Cosmic Birthday, a Starfinder 2E playtest adventure.
Yay!
applause. How's everyone doing tonight? Are we ready to go back to the stars?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Let's do it.
All right. Okay. Let's dive right in. Before we start out in the depths of space, where we see floating in the Pact Worlds, Absalom Station, the shining jewel of the Pact Worlds, this massive mile-wide station with a long spike at the bottom, ships buzzing around it, a fleet of them sort of parked nearby, maybe flittering cargo back and forth. And we come in close, we zoom into the bubble at the center of Absalom Station, this massive bubble under which is a park, greenery, and buildings in this sort of simulated atmosphere. We sort of swoop in, pierce that bubble, come down and see that Akaton, I keep saying Akaton Station, sorry. Because there's some Akaton stuff happening later. Absalom Station is always a bustle. It is a chock full of people, aliens of all sort of species, wandering around doing business, making deals, just sort of tootling around the streets. Most people are walking. Every once in a while, there's an kind of like almost like a tuk-tuk kind of hover vehicle, maybe carrying cargo down some lanes. But for the most part, it's just a lot of people moving about. There's a sort of massive marketplace near this park, just under the bubble. And we continue to move in. We see a small crowd of people standing around this Lashuntan street preacher. He's got himself, this sort of Lashuntan antenna, but he's got this cowl around and he's sort of maybe standing on a little bit of a dais and he is shouting, "Something's coming! The Star Child breaks free of its planet womb! Repent, sinners, and leave your old ways behind! The time of its birth is nigh!" Clearly, like, wild in his eyes, maybe a little bit spittle flecking from his mouth. And there are a bunch of people sort of gather around, some sort of crowd of gawkers sort of watching them. Some of them are holding sort of these hand-painted signs that say, "Yes, the Star Child breaks free, the planet womb cracks," and stuff like that. But there are a couple other people that are clearly just like using their comm unit to film this person and maybe post it up on the infosphere later on. One of these particular people we kind of zoom in on is this android. John, describe your character for us and tell us maybe a little, tell me a little bit about what your character thinks about what this street preacher is saying.
Yeah, so I'm playing Vic Dume, and he is an ancient android, predates the gap even. He's seen many of these world prophets saying the world is ending, the galaxy's ending, all this stuff is ending. He's not sure that this is any more serious than anything in the past. What he does know, though, is that there is something about the fabric of reality that is changing. And he's, over the centuries, become more tuned to these changes. He experienced something very, very salient in his life, roughly 300 years ago, back during the Viscarium War. And since then, he's been trying to get back to this lost reality he experienced for just a brief moment. So Vic Dumais is a medium-sized android, very old-looking technology compared to some of the young ones that we see nowadays. He wears a long cloak and cowl. He's a doctor by training. He'd started off as a battlefield medic and had kind of perfected his medical skills. But since he's had this experience, he's been learning and dealing more with changes in reality, trying to affect his own and learning how to affect others. Vic Dumais is an android witch warper.
How long do you think you sit there or stand there listening to this street preacher before you grow bored or get distracted by something else?
Oh, just long enough to kind of catch the gist of it and realize it's same old, time to move on.
It's kind of that time. It's time to move on. You can kind of sense that, though, something is happening, maybe here in Absalom Station, maybe somewhere in the greater Pact Worlds. That's why you're here, at least right now.
Yes.
You may be drawn by these weird energies.
Yes.
And these energies, they're basically drawing you to, you know, after you've sort of had a little bit of the show here, gone and bring you somewhere else. It's not here near the park. Whatever's going on, it's not happening here. Maybe it's happening on another level. So you head your way over to like the nearest elevator.
Yes.
And
yes.
You get on in. As you step inside, we cut to another part of somewhere in Absalom Station, probably actually close by to the park, a row of street vendors, for food carts, essentially, where the smells of cuisines from across the galaxy are mingling together, and people are lining up and, you know, paying their credits to get a bowl of noodles or something skewered on a stick or just a deep fried piece of dough. The two other people, you know, that we see there sort of peeling away from one of the food carts, is this handsome dark-haired human and a four-armed Kasatha. Now, Mark and Ron, you two here together, I think, describe your characters for us. We'll start with you, Ron, but tell us which one of you is the one pulling the other one around to see all of these, to sort of like taste all these different food carts?
Well, Antholomon Jode is a handsome human man with a severe widow's peak with his dark hair and good-looking features, as Lanty by all appearances. He's wearing a pretty heavy cloak over whatever clothes he's got underneath him. And he is certainly not any longer affiliated with the Aslanti Star Empire, but is making a new home here. And so with all of the delightful vendors that are here, not only was he until recently trying to sample all of the wares and the cuisines from all sorts of cultures with which he is not familiar, it did not take him long to see the row of, you know, dejected, you know, kids who, you know, smell the great smells but can't afford something. And so he's quick to get a couple of skewers of meats on stick and things on dishes to go over to give them to these kids so that they can enjoy it as well.
That's nice. Thanks, mister. There's a couple like other people maybe like looking around, noticing that you are Aslanti. You know, you're not like hiding it, right? You're wearing a cloak and all, but you're not.
I'm wearing a cloak over my clothes, hair. But my head is not covered. So the Aslanti features are pretty common.
The Aslanti features are pretty obvious, but you're just getting looks. You're just wary looks, not angry looks, not disgusted looks or anything like that. Just occasionally, everyone's going like maybe giving a double take. Like, was that guy Aslanti? Yeah, well, it's Absalom Station. You know, only on Absalom Station, someone says to themselves. With you is Kasatha. Mark.
That would be Eswar. And he is fairly normal looking Kasatha in sort of his physical features, the gray skin, the forearms, has his face covered as the Kasathans do. What might make him stand out a little bit is the stellar nimbus around him, which looks like motes of dust and actually small asteroids or meteorites that sort of are caught in his gravitational pull and trapped around mm-hmm. his body and kind of orbit around him all the time that provide him a little bit of protection.
One of the street urchins is occasionally like tossing a little bit of like detritus at your gravity as Jode is giving them food.
I'll give him a glare.
Runs away.
Jode, if you keep feeding them, they'll just follow us around all day.
Well, as long as they're hungry, I want them to follow me around all day.
Ah, you're impossible.
Now, how do you two know each other?
Well, we met on the battlefield, and we were on opposite sides, quite
opposite
frankly.
Sides of the battlefield, yes.
That's right. You wanna give it to him? Or?
Well, we were on. We were both stationed to seize as a forward point for each of our sort of respective forces a particular asteroid that didn't necessarily have a lot of intrinsic value except as a staging point. And the fighting over it was very fierce. A lot of the forces got cut off from each other, and it did not take long for us to realize that each of us were the only representative of the other side visible in this fight. We could hear the fight from going on, but all we could see was each other at this minute, where we knew we were on opposite sides, but we were the only ones here on this desolate asteroid. You want to go ahead and pick it up from there, Mark?
Basically, the idea is that we were not in a position where getting back to our respective forces was very feasible. We were kind of out on our own and needed to help each other just to survive. Mm-hmm. And so there was a bit of an extended period where it was just us two. Mm-hmm. And it was help each other out or perish. And so we helped each other out. And...
Nice.
Learned respect for each other. We created a close bond. And at the end of it, Jode didn't want to be part of the Aslanti Empire anymore, and I sort of got him out of there.
All right.
Exactly cool. Right. I felt like the bonds of friendship that I made were stronger than loyalty to a despotic empire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, makes sense, and good on you. Because if you were evil, you wouldn't be here.
I will add a little bit that in addition to having been on opposite sides of the conflict, our personalities are a little bit on opposite sides as well. Jode is very much a help everybody, everything is good, everything is light kind of a fellow. And Eswar is a little bit more on the darker side of things. He's...
Which Jode thinks that some examples of true charity and kindness can really bring Eswar around over time, perhaps over time.
And I think that I can keep him from his self-destructive, altruistic behavior. So our push and pull kind of keeps us in the middle and keeps us on track.
Fair enough. Well, Eswar, you take a glance at your comm unit to notice the time, and that basically your the little lunch excursion that you've had is gotta be over because you have to you've been kind of like assigned Jode a little bit to keep an eye on him because top brass aren't 100% sure that he's not a spy in some way, but you know he's not. He's maybe a little too good to be true. Maybe, it's interesting that he's defected, but it's always a case of like, for a couple of weeks, there's someone to keep an eye on. And as a matter of fact, you've got an appointment at this sort of steward HQ, stewards being the sort of like law enforcement, packed worldwide law enforcement agency, that he's got to just sort of check in, make sure that you bring him in for check in. Maybe they'll ask him a few more questions, make sure that he's still on the up and up, that sort of thing. But you've basically got that appointment coming up real soon. So you pull Jode away from the kids who are, say bye. They stand there and wave goodbye. And the two of you head to, it's on another level. So you've got to head over to an elevator. You step into the same elevator as, Dr. Dume. But from there, as you step in, we move again back onto the streets outside of this park. And we kind of, go into this, this shop. clearly a pawn shop of some kind. It's got the sort of universal pawn shop symbol above it. And it's chock full of stuff, just random detritus here and there, but we don't linger in there too long. We actually head back into the back room where there are two Vesk having a conversation. The one Vesk is dressed in kind of a tracksuit, essentially this sort of deep blue tracksuit with a t-shirt, you know, sort of white t-shirt underneath. He's got a little bit of a cybernetics on his right eye, and he clearly is the way he's sitting at a desk is clearly the owner of the pawn shop. The other Vesk is Tim. Tim, tell us a little bit about what you look like, who you are.
Ah, okay. Yeah, so my character is Krizek Ver. He is a sort of ex-military. He was actually in the Vescarian military, he was turned out to be a very good Brutaris player with the troop activities. So they essentially enlisted him to become a professional Brutaris player to help kind of promote the military, to kind of make it look sexier, to try to basically make it a little more popular. So he's kind of sort of a poster boy in a way, but he was singled out because he's pretty brutal in how he plays, and he has a lot of aggression built up. So he tends to enjoy that kind of activity. He's kind of has a moniker in a way, so he has a persona when he plays, and he's the Corporal Crusher. So think of Sergeant Slaughter sort of thing. Mm. So he kind of he's not super famous. He's not one of the best Brutaris players, and especially in the league. But he's got a fan base, I guess. And but it's very stark. If he's not in his persona, he's not in his Brutaris gear. It's people wouldn't necessarily, unless they're super uber fans, they probably wouldn't know who he was. So he gets a sort of a little bit of anonymity in that. So
he's good. Yeah.
He can like step away from it and just be him. But he's very, I mean, if he wasn't in the if he wasn't doing Brutaris, he'd be in the military. He'd be a very vicious fighter. So he is, if you're getting into, so he's obviously a soldier. But he is a Warblood Vesk, so he's kind of got it in his blood that he is just incredibly violent. He bites, he scratches, he tackles, he wrestles. He's very physical, so he's up in the face. So he doesn't mind guns, but they're not as fun. It's just
fair enough.
It takes the fun out of it. So, but right now he's on Absalom Station, taking kind of a break. You know, the season's kind of over right now, and he's taking a little break, going to Absalom Station to see some sights and kind of figure something out. But because it's Absalom Station, and he's not really good at downtime. And there's not a lot of violence in downtime. He's kind of antsy.
You've maybe sort of asked around a little bit, and you've come to this pawnbroker who goes by the name of Jules Akama. To maybe like see if he's got, you know, he's not just a pawnbroker. He's also kind of like a fixer a little bit. He does his odd jobs and what like that. And he is basically sort of sizing you up, and he's nodding. He's like, yeah, you'll do. Yeah. Okay. So you're looking to do a little bit of extra work on the side.
Yeah.
Krizek, right? Krizek?
Krizek.
Krizek. Nice. All right. Well, I got something. Look, we got something that just kind of came in. I just recently acquired a freighter from, believe it or not, the Aslanti Star Empire. It's got a nice, colorful past. Probably full of plenty of salvage, but we just towed it into the docks, and we got some life sign readings aboard, right? I need someone to go in there and, you know, just sort of take out the trash. You know what I'm saying? Exterminate any bugs that happen to be, in the corridors or in the woodwork.
Extermination. I like it.
Okay, great, great. Look, okay, of course, it's down at the, it's parked out in the Armada right now, so you're going to need to go down to the docks and get a little bit of a transport over there. But once we get there, you know, the impound lock, it gives you like a passcode to get past, you know, through it all that. And you can just go in there, have your fun, vent out whatever you need to do. If anything breaks, whatever, I don't care. I'm going to salvage the thing anyway. Yeah, just get that shuttle. Do that. You come back here. I'll pay you. Sound good?
Sounds fun.
All right. Okay. Well, I look forward to hearing from you. Any kind of like points you to the back door and you stomp your way out. And basically, you know, to get down to the docks to head out into the Armada, you're going to have to go down in a couple levels. So we see you stomping your way into that self same elevator as the other three characters. And as you sort of squeeze your way in, again, we swoop back out to the street, full of shops and whatnot. And we actually sort of go to a different store, a little more of a colorful store, a little more of a brighter store, a store of essentially party supplies, and that sort of thing, picking their way through the party supplies, sort of gathering things, is Yusoki. Steph, you're here to basically get a bunch of streamers and party supplies for the little Akaton Community Center.
Well, but of tell course, us a little more about your character. Because we have to have a party.
You're having a party. Yeah.
We're having a party. We're going to have a party. So I'm getting the stuff for the party.
Yeah. So yeah. Tell us a little bit about who you are and what your character's name is and what they look like.
So I'm Starchild. You might have heard of me because some people have heard of me and sometimes they kind of follow me around and they want to. But anyway, the important thing is that we do things and we talk about things that are important. And I have these songs that come to me. I was born in the Drift. And that's why I have all this lightning inside me. Sometimes it comes out when I don't mean to, but mostly it just makes me really excited. And we do things like today, we're going to have a party over with the Akatons at the center. So I need to get the party stuff and get over there.
Your comm unit chirps. It is a person by the name of Joya Milan, who is the head of the community center. She is human. She's actually I've forgotten what they're called, but the redskin humans who live on Mars, right? And so she's chiming in to talk to you. Do you answer?
Oh, hi. Yeah, hi.
Hi, Starchild. How's it going? Are you finding all the things?
Oh, I'm finding so many things. It's great. It's great.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. So yeah, obviously, no rush, but I wanted to make sure that you, and she basically starts listing off a couple things that you've already got in your hands, right? She's just clearly maybe like micromanaging you just a little bit. She's definitely sort of an older woman. She's got stark white hair and this deep red skin. But she's been pretty friendly to you, and she's perhaps doesn't exactly know who you are, why this is going to be a bigger party than she's expecting it to be, because you're slightly famous, but famous on the infosphere that she has no part of, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So she's treating you like basically sort of a standard volunteer to the community center.
All right. With kind of... Yeah, we have got this all under control. I'm sorry, I've got to go. I will be back over there as soon as I can. We're good. We're good. We'll talk to you. I'll be there really soon. Okay, bye.
Okay. See, click. And so you go. You pay for all these supplies with the credits they gave you for that. There's probably an account that you can put them on. And you head yourself out of the store under the street and into that self same elevator with the other four characters. Your arms heaped with bags of streamers and cardboard party hats and maybe those little plastic whistles and so forth.
Hey guys, I'm going to a party at the Akaton Center. Well, I'm kind of putting it on. But anyway, could you, hey, could you just hold this for a second? Sorry, let me get this. Oof, these bags. I don't know why they don't do that. while she's all flustered, she actually sticks a couple of things in her cheek pouches.
Okay, great.
Oh, sorry. Did you say, I'm going to use Soki, but very, like, really unusually kind of ethereal and kind of hard to not look at, because that's not what Yusoki usually look like.
Fair enough. Yep. And as you stuff a few things into your cheeks, again, we sort of whip out into the park itself. And perhaps, you know, there is a bit of a small babbling brook over which a wooden bridge sort of crosses. And standing on that bridge is a Patra. Scott, let us know who you are and what you look like.
So, Zoshra Shizori is a Patra, standing there wearing micro-cord armor, sort of a gray-silver with blue shimmering shot through it, very lithe and lean, but also well-armed, with a rifle and several pistols. Occasionally you see them flex their hand, and you see just a glimpse of some lethal-looking claws just peek through. Seems to be sort of gazing off, especially into the forest. They've not been here for too long, but they're used to action. They're used to a lot of action, and you'll see once in a while they'll sort of tend to look, eyes darting back and forth to see if there's anything nearby approaching. They made their way here from Polonius, the homeworld, following some subversive actions against the occupiers, in sort of guerrilla actions, and things got a little too hot for them. So they managed to get away and ended here in Absalom Station, sort of waiting for things to cool down and really looking for something to do in the meantime, really a cause, because, you know, they're very much about causes. You know, they're a person of action. They want to do things, but they also are, you see a slight smile because they are somewhat carefree as well.
It's good. Do you think you were like putting out feelers on the infospheres, on the sort of like maybe like the dark infosphere, like, oh, I need some work, or you're just like maybe have something set up that pings you when something might come up, right? Or, you know, are you putting yourself out there, or are you just sort of waiting for something to come to you?
I think it's fresh enough that they're not really looking for things immediately. It's more of a maybe some light feelers, but nothing like, hey, I really need, you know, looking for something to do. It's more being more attention of something interesting. It's got to be the right thing.
Fair enough. I think there's something, as you're standing there on the bridge, you get a little ping on your commune and you've just gotten a message. Sort of through these maybe like definitely secure channels. You've been definitely, you know, watching your tail, so to speak. No pun intended there. But keeping yourself clean while you're, you know, basically waiting to get back, maybe the chance to get back to Polonus at some point. But you get a little a message sort of sent through like probably several different servers. An individual whose name is Nick Knack, 2 K's in both senses, and just sort of reaching out to you saying that they might have a little bit of, what's the word I'm looking for? A cause, something that you might be interested in, them, and wants you to come meet them, at their scrapyard, in, Little Akaton. No strings attached, clearly. It's just sort of like, come, maybe we'll talk about it. You know, if we'll, you know, maybe we can feel, you know, sort of get a feeling for how each of us thinks about the other person and whether or not this would be a good fit for, you know, some work to do or something to do.
Okay. So after scrolling through several spam messages, it came in after that, back up. and just sends back a okay.
Great. It's kind of also, and almost instantly you get a message back. Hey, let's meet in an hour.
Okay.
Great. Thumbs up.
Exactly.
And basically thumbs up emoji, and then like a little sort of like an infosphere link to the basically the address, you know, saying, you know, scrapyard in Little Akaton is not necessarily super specific, but it isn't so vague either. But they give you sort of like a street address essentially. But again, that's on another level. So you are the last person to come to the elevator and squeeze yourself in. This is all kind of happening like those of you who are, you know, going into the elevator, you're not waiting there 20 minutes for the next person to show up. Obviously, you've entered the this
it's
elevator
not full yet.
Yeah, you've entered this elevator sort of very quickly, one after the other. We just sort of time dilated this sort of introduction.
Hey, sure, backstory.
Just because Jason can't GM simultaneous events. But,
I know. I'm the worst. I'm the worst. And as Zostra, you enter the step in the elevator, you know, and you've all sort of pressed your buttons for your various destinations. There is a little chime as the metal doors close and the elevator begins to sort of lurch slowly downward. You're a tiny bit of basically elevator music is playing very tinnily over a speaker, something with no words, something with the barest bit of melody. And then the elevator screeches to a dead stop.
Oh no.
And you all feel it. This is definitely unexpected. There's there's like a beat before an emergency alert broadcast blares out from all of your comm units, the speaker that used to be playing elevator music. And it is just this loud sort of, you know, and red sort of triangle with an arrow in it on all your comm units. Something is going on. The whole elevator shakes around you as that alarm coming out of each of your comm units and from the speakers shifts into this scream that spikes dread in your every nerve. The lights flicker and then blaze into unbearable brightness, searing the image of a floating tentacled monstrosity into your eyes. And then it all goes dark. The six of you are standing there in the darkness in this elevator. Your comm units have just gone completely dead. There's no sound coming through the speaker. What do you do?
All right, everyone, stay calm. Stay calm. There has to be a way out of here. Let's get out of here right now. How do we get out?
I think I just saw a hallucination of some big monster.
Yeah, I did too.
Turn my light on. I have a flashlight. I'm going to try it.
Sure. Turn the light on. Flashlight. Okay. You can now all see each other's faces illuminated in that sort of very dim way of a single flashlight.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thank goodness you're prepared for this.
Oh, what? The rest of you could not see?
The Vesk is always prepared.
apologies. Yes, of course.
Well, I'm not glad you're all prepared. Do you have a tool for getting us out of this elevator then?
Well, we should look around and check our surroundings. Usually there's a hatch or something. Maybe
There's indeed a hatch in the ceiling. There's an elevator panel, basically, you know, instead of a bunch of buttons, essentially, it was kind of like a data pad, a touch screen. Sure. But underneath that touch screen, there is clearly an access panel to the electronics. And then there's the doors as well, obviously.
Or an emergency call button as well. Sometimes they'll have those.
Unfortunately, the panel that had all the buttons of destinations, that touchscreen, is completely dead.
Yeah.
Well, I'll get you know, the hatch up above. I'll get underneath it and lean forward a little bit on one leg and interlace my fingers together and put it on my knee and look at Eswar.
All right. And I'll... accept that boost up and see if I can get that hatch open.
All right. Why don't you give me an athletics check? First check of the game.
Athletics check. Okay. Do-do-do. That means I've got a... that means I got to figure out how to do that.
fair enough.
There it is. Athletics.
Hey,
that's pretty good.
21 total. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're able to 21. Kind of like get yourself up there, open the hatch and get on top of the elevator. Easy mm-hmm. peasy. You're up here, you know, there's this is not necessarily a turbo lift. This is actually a physical elevator with a big sort of cable stretching up into the darkness. You can get with a little bit of light. Do you have dark vision or low light vision?
No.
Okay. From the little bit of light that's sort of pouring out of the elevator from, Tim's flashlight, you can see a little bit. There's some, you know, there's clearly mechanisms, up here,
mm-hmm.
You know, that have engaged to sort of keep you in place.
Okay. Could you pass up the flashlight? I want to look around.
So is my height enough that I can just put my hand up?
Right. Yeah, you can put your hand up pretty close.
It's like he watches you guys like boosting each other and he's like rolls his eyes. The fist comes up through the hatch just like the flashlight.
I can yeah. offer some light up bracelets.
Get some little bracelets. There you go.
Little party bracelets.
If you'd like a second set of eyes, I can come up. I can see fairly well in the dark.
Okay.
I will. Then I will turn towards the Patra with my hands still interlaced on my knee and go, "All right, here's a boost."
Alley-oop.
Scott, give me an athletics check as well.
And can I assist? Can I give my hand up or something like that?
Yeah, why don't you give me an aid roll so you can roll your athletics if you want, and you just got to get, you know, basically beat a 10.
Okay.
Well, we'll see.
Yeah, athletics again?
Yeah, athletics.
Okay.
Makes sense.
Well, that should be easy enough.
Yeah, that should be.
Okay, so plus one to you, Scott.
Got it. I may have to get the claws out because I'm untrained in this, so.
Oh, not trained in athletics.
No,
I'm more of an acrobatics type.
You're more of an acrobat. You do seem like more of an acrobatics type.
We shall see.
Oh, you're not getting your foot claws out, are you? My hands are right here.
hand claws.
So yeah, you're not quite able to scrabble your way up through this hatch. You can try again if you want.
Yeah, we'll give it one more shot.
Sure. Meanwhile, Eswar, what are you doing up top? Are you doing
I'm looking for a way out. I'm looking for a set of doors I can pry open or a way to climb out. No, there you go.
And then you leap your way through, Scott, to the land.
I don't need the hand.
Yeah, you didn't need the hand.
That's just being polite.
Natural 20 there. Natural 20.
Yeah, natural 20 on that one. So you should have leaped your way up there, and you're on top of the other. And the two of you are looking around with the light and your dark vision. There is a set of, you know, basically doors about 10 feet above you.
Mm-hmm.
That look like, you know, they're obviously closed, but they look like they would be to, you know, out of the shaft itself.
Okay. Is there a way to climb up there?
It's not impossible for you to do it on your own, but there's no ladder or anything.
Okay.
I do have rope. If someone can get up there, we could get the rest.
Well, I think I'd be willing to give it a try.
Why don't you take the rope and tie it around yourself first?
Okay. I will do that.
Mm-hmm. You're about to start like maybe looking. You're looking for some handholds to grab onto. Maybe there's, you know, it's not necessarily completely a smooth steel or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So you're being looking at that when the elevator beneath you lurches and plummets down the shaft as it's falling. I need everyone to roll a reflex save to begin with.
Oh boy.
And then an initiative check.
Okay.
Oh boy.
Nice.
Where's my reflex save? There it is.
Let me make sure.
Reflex save, right?
Reflex save, yes.
Yeah. Oh, and then you wanted a initiative as well?
Let me do all everyone's reflex save real quick.
Sure.
Great. Uh-oh. Okay. So let's talk. Kryzek, Jode. And Starchild, as the elevator is plummeting, you're all sort of thrown off your feet, basically, for the most part. You are the three of you are clumsy too.
Oh no!
The rest of you are are the rest of you are got your feet a little bit better and are only clumsy one. Oh, I have to put that. I'm going to put that on all of you.
No crit save. The 28.
Oh, hold on. You know what? You should have be nothing. You know, honestly, it doesn't say here, but yeah, with a crit save, I think you should have. You're fine. You're up on the elevator. You're surfing it. Good. You did get a 28.
Yeah. I do this all the time.
You do this all the time.
That's how you sneak through buildings.
Yeah. Sorry, this is the part that always takes me a little bit in Foundry, is making sure that everyone's got the effects on them, especially when it's a massive group of people.
Massive effect.
Okay, so the rest of while this is happening, I do want you all to now roll initiative. You may use perception for that, and you should, if you go to the sort of crossed swords tab above the chat, you'll see an encounter there with all your names on it, and you can just press the button next to your name to roll initiative.
Oh, that's cool.
Auto populates that.
Let me try that.
Star Child. We heard about a Star Child out in the square at Jitembe Park.
Yeah, some people have heard about me. But then I'm like, well,
you're much smaller than I would have expected.
It doesn't mean it's true. I mean, I'm true. Nope. I'm here. But they just say things on the infosphere that aren't true. A lot.
Oh, good. All right. So let's begin this encounter. For the most part, you've all rolled terrible. This elevator continues to plummet to how far down you are not certain. The sort of touch screen begins to spark, basically sort of throw out a little bit of extra light down there. So now you can all sort of those of you in the elevator can kind of see each other's terrified faces as you're stumbling around this elevator as it plummets downward. All right, Mr. Jode, you got a 15. What would you like to do? This is sort of a standard encounter. You've got three actions. What are you going to do in this moment of action?
Well, this is this is trouble. I want to look up and make sure that my friend is still up on the top of the elevator. They didn't fall off or anything, right?
Yeah. They're both still on top. They're just sort of getting as the thing falls, there may be a little less gravity for them, but same for you. You're all sort of in free fall.
Well, you said that there was a panel underneath the touch screen.
Mm-hmm.
Look, I'm not big into computers, but maybe that's going to be something that's going to let us stop or otherwise, I get to stop this elevator. The best I can do is maybe try to get this panel open for somebody that knows a little more about electronics to be able to do their magic inside. Is that a thing I can open up? Is it easily?
It is open. You can open it up. Yeah, we'll say that's an interact action to just sort of flip. There's maybe like a you press it in and it pops open.
Okay, what's inside?
It's mostly I guess there's some wires that you can kind of see, but for the most part, there is kind of like an emergency, a physical emergency call button. Basically some other electronics.
And nothing that is a lever that's clearly marked to stop elevator.
No, maybe that sort of like, there's like, those like just pure circular keys that have maybe a little notch on one side that you would use to sort of access panel type key. It's not literally like a key, but more of a, I don't know what, a nut almost.
Mm-hmm.
There's like a hole for that, but you don't have one of those, obviously, unless you do. I don't know. Did you take the elevator technician background?
Let me double check. Do I have elevator lore? No, I do not have elevator lore. I sure wish I did. The I can kind of pop the panel open with whatever I have at hand. Is that a thievery type of thing?
That would be thievery. You would need to be trained in it, though.
Well, never you mind then. Gosh, maybe getting out of the elevator is the smartest thing to do, but I don't know that anything's much better from the roof.
You can examine the panel if you want, or
said there's an awful lot of wiring in addition. Is there some way I can examine to see what that wiring does?
Yeah, give me a perception check.
Okay. Oh. There we go.
All right.
Well, 17.
17. So I think you can figure out if someone were to get in here and sort of repair some of this console wiring, that might help. You suspect that there, if you got a thievery check to kind of like open up that security lock sort of situation, that might engage the safety mechanisms. And I'll tell you that that's thievery, but repairing things, wires, that's crafting.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
There's no engineering skill. Or if you had engineering lore, for instance, obviously I would allow that. Right. But as main skills go, there is no engineering skill any or mechanics skill. So that would be crafting.
I don't have either of those.
Okay.
Well, I'll do my best to kind of hold everything open and to the side so somebody who does know more about that can get in. Okay. I initially sort of step aside so that maybe Vic can get at that as being an android, and then I worry that makes me racist, and I just stand there sort of uncomfortably.
Sure. Do you want to, like, prep an aid, basically, for whoever gets in?
I will, yes. I'll prep an aid for somebody who's going to come in there to thievery or crafting it.
Whoever's going to do it. Eswar, up on top of the elevator.
Yeah, since I'm outside the elevator, I was going to look around to see if there's any sort of a braking mechanism to try to stop this that I could kind of kick into being activated.
Give me a perception check as well.
Perception. Okay, wait a second here.
I'll tell you that perception ends up being under attributes and not skills, since it's technically not a skill in this sort of framework. So if you're looking at the HUD,
I see it right above initiative.
Oh, hold on here. Under attributes. Okay. Oh yeah. Perception right there.
Yeah. But don't roll perception initiative. Roll. It'll be the same. It won't really matter, but there's one that's sort of like one. You can choose what initiative you would roll, but for the most part, you can also just underneath that is just straight perception.
Mm-hmm. I think maybe if you do initiative perception, it replaces it.
Yeah, it'll replace yourself on the thing, but that's fine. Why don't you give me that roll?
Oh, there it is. Okay. And that's not super great.
So you're looking around, right? And there are like clearly some form of mechanisms on the in the corners of the elevator that are just throwing off all of these sparks as the elevator is plummeting downward. You suspect one of those, but you might have to sort of like do multiple ones of those to fully stop the elevator. Uh-huh. And you're not entirely certain how they work, how they're supposed to work. They're clearly not working because the elevator is plummeting.
Right. Could I try a crafting check?
You know what? Yeah. Are you trained in crafting?
I am.
Okay, great. So just so you know, doing something to basically disable a hazard is a two action activity. So this is going to be your final two actions.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay.
All right.
Crafting.
Here we go. Well, that's way better. That's a 19.
That is better. So you get over there, maybe you grab one of them, do you have like any tools on you, or are you just like kind of like pulling at something with your bare hands?
Not really, yeah, more bare hands. I don't really have a lot of tools with me.
Okay, great. Yeah, you're just in there, and maybe there's something that looks like a lever, and you're getting there, and you're grabbing it, and it's sparking even greater, but you can kind of feel a little bit like...
I'm trying percussive maintenance.
Yeah, you're smashing it, just at it, and it's slowing the elevator down a little bit, but you would need to engage another one of these brakes to stop it completely.
Okay.
But your turn is over.
And my turn's over, yeah.
Starchild.
All right. I want to use my living battery trait to power the touchpad back on.
Tell me more about what this is.
Okay, I think if I click on it, then it shows up in the...
If there's like a speech bubble, you can plop it into the... but I can also just look at it.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
It was all new.
Yeah, this is pretty cool. So what I think it does is that I can channel the lightning that's always floating around inside me to, or the electricity inside me, to turn the panel back on. And then
that's pretty cool. You also have the electric arc at will, basically, which is cool.
Yeah.
Our tech items. Okay, so you don't have to roll anything for that. It's just a two action spell, essentially, right? To do it, you're just sort of like channeling electricity through. You basically send electricity all through this thing, and it does sort of briefly power up the sort of elevator touchpad. However, instead of like a list of floors or sometimes an advertisement will play on one of these things, it is a staticky jumbled mess and this jagged text that just says, "It is awake."
Oh boy.
Well, that sounds ominous.
Let's not go to that floor.
Could I do like a computer's check to see if I can just find an override and get it to stop or to slow down? Like to help?
Yeah. Slow down the...
Okay.
You're trained in computers, I take it?
I think so. I believe
I
did that.
I can see that you are.
Okay.
Yeah, give me a computer's check at the same time as your last action, as you're sending through.
Is this when I jump in order to give an aid?
Do you think, my question is do you think you can, is this something you think you can sort of, what skill would you roll to sort of help this almost more magical sort of computer hacking that's been that's happening?
I don't know. Arcana?
Mm. Mm. You have Arcana. Great. Yeah. Give me I love it.
Yeah, I am.
Me too. That's great.
You trained
arcanically inclined. Except I'm not great at applying it in this situation.
I think we're all a little bit surprised that Starchild, basically Emperor Palpatine's this control panel.
Did you just use Emperor Palpatine as a verb?
Yes, I did. And there's nothing you can do.
We all knew what he meant.
But yeah, we all got it, right?
Communication happened.
Steph, you rolled a 17, which is pretty darn good in this instance. And so you eventually sort of like, twist the lightning around a little bit and attempt to override something within the panel. Another red triangle with an exclamation mark in it, sort of warning symbol, sort of over, you know, comes across it. Breaks out the text that's there is no longer there. It comes up the button that is an emergency button that was kind of like giving off sparks. Kind of has a light little glow around it. And all you imagine all that are down here would think that you would need to, if someone were to press that button, it would help slow down the elevator. However, you're out of actions. Zosra, you're up on top of the elevator. What are you up to?
Oh man.
Well, that depends on what I know is going on.
You know that Eswar is grabbed a brake and is essentially pulling on it to start to slow down the elevator. And you see electricity shooting out from someone.
That's safe.
I don't want to look down there. There's all sorts of sparking electricity going on.
Would thievery help on the brake situation?
Yeah, we'll let you roll thievery on that, too. That's a more delicate procedure than just sort of grabbing at it. You're trained in that? You can give me a roll.
I am trained, yeah. I looked for tools but couldn't find them because I know in Pathfinder you need to have
There's probably a toolkit that's standard.
Okay, well, let me throw that out and give you a check.
Well, there you go. That's good.
Um, So yeah, you get in there and so you get in there with some maybe you do have a little bit some sort of light tools on you for thievery purposes, and you get in there and you also always. Get in there and maybe gears or some sort of mechanisms in there and jam that as well. And as the as that second break engages, maybe someone, John, since you're next, maybe you lurch towards that button and press it at the same time. The elevator comes to a halt, a jolting halt, not a gentle halt for sure, but at least you're not taking damage from crashing at the bottom of the shaft.
Yeah.
And stops. There's another sort of tinny chime as the doors open quite gently and quite normally onto a corridor that is fairly pitch black, with just a single flashlight on the ground shining a little bit of a beam. This is no one's destination, as far as you can tell. And that's where we'll end it for this week.
All right.
So creepy.
This is specifically the floor I thought we should not go to.
Perhaps.